on 1116 SEN. Bring back the Ashes with Rob Quiney and David Hussey for Squire's Loft, 131 Buckley Street, Essendon, and Queen's Road, Albert Park.
Oh, he's cleaned it up. There it is. Hazelwood full and fast. Anderson helps it onto his own stumps. One of the swiftest recoveries in world cricket is complete. Australia nail England.
From beaten to absolute bully boys, the Australians in the matter of four short days have turned this Ashes series on its ear. And Bring Back the Ashes last week sounded like Bring Back the Ashes. Well, we've got a different tone this week. It's Bring Back the Ashes with Bobby Quiney. How are you, Robert?
Good, fine, dog. G'day, Hustler. How you doing?
Robert, Finey.
And what an amazing turnaround, Finey. I suggested last week that that Bucky Rogers would get 100, and I wanted Mitch Johnson to get some wickets as well, and come to fruition, and now we're level at one apiece.
Could you possibly request in the next test for... I think we get another ton for Bucky. We'll get... The captain needs to get some runs.
Yep.
Clark to get 150, and on the third day for me to win Tats Lotto.
Yeah, well, can we go three ways in the Tats Lotto?
Perfect. In the Tats Lotto we can.
Yeah, we've got to get a ticket then, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. This plan has just fallen a cropper. And we've got great guests tonight. We're making a call to your family. Whoever picks up the phone we'll talk to.
Hopefully it's Mike and not his wife. But yeah, looking forward to hearing from him. A past Ashes winner, I guess. But one word to describe the English in the last performance was poor. They were completely outplayed.
The toss was won, and for the first day, everybody said, well, this wicket is simply one you can't get batsmen out on. No, it was actually a wicket you can't get two very, very good batsmen out on. David Warner would have been kicking himself, took the bait and went out to Moeen Ali, and the batting was fantastic. One thing about Bucky, it's easy to say Bucky will play the sheet anchor role and David Warner will get the runs at the top of the order. It just doesn't work out like that, does it? Nowhere near it. No. Couldn't keep up with Chris Rogers.
No, he went all guns a-blazing, Bucky. And, you know, I was watching that first day and saw some really crucial moments, which I like touching on. And mine was when, you know, Root sort of pulled out, I think, a little bit on... It was at Bucky's third or fourth ball, and Bucky looked like he's trying to play 20-20 in that first over. And, yeah, and as you said, when you think that Warner and Rogers weren't going to go out for the whole day, and I think Warner probably just went a little bit too hard with Ali, you know, whether it was a game plan or not. But, you know, the cricket smart says if you got 10 off that over, you can get 10 off the next and 10 off the next if you really want to. So, but, you know, credit to Bucky Rogers and Steve Smith, who put an amazing partnership and really took the game away from England.
But with that, you've got to take the bull by the horns, Rob.
Joe
Root, got to go for that catch. If you happen to take a blinder, that lifts the English team, lifts James Anderson, who went wicketless at Lord's for the first time in his whole career. Gets momentum flowing, the English crowd behind the English team, and sadly, good things for Bucky, he ends up making 100 and gets his name on the honour board.
Too right.
I wrote down some questions as I was watching the cricket I wanted to ask you. Wood comes into the team, he's a young player, supposed to be a bit of a strike bowler. He seemed to be bowling at a pace that suggested he wanted to bowl 40 overs for the day. When did he become a stock bowler?
That's an interesting one when we talk about certain bowlers, particularly in red ball cricket. They know they've got to bowl longer spells, but there's also whispers around the traps that he's actually pretty cooked at the moment. You know, they're coming to the back end of their, or middle to back end of the county season, and, you know, played against New Zealand as well and in the one day or so. This is probably the most international. It is the most international exposure that he's ever had, and you know he might be just physically fatiguing and potentially now mentally fatiguing if these bowlers are finding that the wicket's too flat.
But also, it's how you're being used as well. I thought Alistair Cook used him poorly. He bowled long spells, like 6-7 overs at a time, whereas Michael Clark did that to Mitchell Johnson in the first Test at Cardiff. And this time, I thought Michael Clark used all the bowlers superbly. Short spells, really attacked the English and got breakthroughs at the right time. And I think full credit to Michael Clark. He really turned up. His captaincy, his tactical nous, I guess, was tip top.
Question number two: the batting lineup. They didn't miss a bullet in the first test. They won that first test fair and square, but they must have known that there was going to be a concern up at the top of the order with Lyth. For one, Lyth could be exposed, but if that was the case, then to have a number three that Yeah, he made a 60, but it was pretty scratchy and then looked far more balanced like making a duck. To have that at the top of the order is a huge risk, isn't it? And unfortunately for the Poms, it has backfired. The question is, they cannot go again with Lyth and Balance opening in at three, surely.
And they won't find Og. I'm pretty sure they're going to make a change. Me and Huss are probably in a little bit of disagreement on who they're going to flick. But I guess putting all the pressure on Alistair Cook, who seems to be just finding his touch a little bit bit more now and putting more added pressure on him. And then I guess expecting Bell, the season campaigner, who, you know, is in Huss's gun at the moment, and Joe Root to pick up the pieces. You don't really want that. And you saw the way that we batted, that big partnership, none for 70, then one for, 368 or something like that, it's so vital, those early wickets, when you're bowling and when you're batting, not to lose them. So, yeah, Huss had it pretty good with the Vicks when he come in at two for about 300 and come in and smashed him everywhere.
Yeah, well, enough about me and my cricket. I think the English are going to stick with their two openers. In saying that, I thought Lyth's been poor in both tests. He shot
dropped Warner, I think, first over in the second innings too.
And I've got some advice for him. Look, after you go out, son, don't take your helmet off, because then people sort of... it's like Homer Simpson when he had hair and then went bald, When he had hair, it was, hey, ho, old man, who is that dynamic go-getter?
Very
and when
handsome.
The hair fell out, who is that old geezer?
He's been bald for a while, and he has.
He has, yeah, but I didn't mind that, though. He's actually realised he's stuffed up, let the team down a bit. He's going to take the all the criticism on the chin, walking past the members in the long room. And
who still clap him off.
They still clap you off. They generally follow it up with a pity about the shot or something like that. But Adam Lyth really needs to pull his socks up and score some runs in the next test at Edgbaston, or he'll find himself back at Yorkshire playing at Headingley.
He's a Yorkshireman. The other Yorkshireman did all right on the weekend.
Bairstow.
No, the golfer that was he was leading there for a while. I think what's his name?
Colin Montgomery.
No, I'll have a look at the leaderboard. He was very good. He's a Yorkshireman. I heard him talking. It sounded like Jeffrey Boycott.
I lost enough sleep with the cricket to watch the golf. So
yeah, it was. Well, who would have thought that the cricket would go for 4 days and the golf for 5 days?
Not me.
Yeah,
no.
Nor me.
So, are there any obvious? Or are there any replacements other than the continually tweeting Kevin Peterson, who's now on some lounge chair by some pool somewhere,
doing it tough,
yanking their chain?
he just chimed in beautifully. Great timing from KP, but
so silly. He wrote.
What I'm hearing is something, and which I actually agree with, is to put Bell up to three. It's only one spot. He's the lead. He's got to drive and lead the team, and they've had problems at the top, and it's up to him and Cook to step up. And one of Bucky Rogers' long lost cousins who plays at Yorkshire, Johnny Bairstow, who's made 4 tons in 5 games, and even runs in the white ball game as well.
And
he's been dominating. And at worst case scenario, I guess if they want to get rid of Butler, he can keep as well.
How can you drop Ian Bell though? How can you drop
Balance?
He averages high 40s in tests. Ian Bell doesn't actually look like making a run at the moment. His footwork's poor at the minute. He's not going forward, not going back. His defence is at sea.
They've got to win the Ashes though. Like we're talking about here and now. Essentially, the Ashes turns into a 3-match Ashes series here because they're one apiece. Something needs to happen now. And as I said last week, you don't need to ring too many changes, but that's where I think they're falling down. It doesn't look like he's got any confidence whatsoever.
He doesn't even have balance.
Neither does Bell, though.
Yeah, but Bell can fake it, and they know, as an Australian team, they know if Bell can just get through that to 20 to 30, they know they go, oh, look out here. Where they know Balance had to fight his ass off to get to 60, and then he got out, and then that's it so far. So
I know you boys love your sleep, but did you see Balance against the New Zealanders?
I've seen Balance. He's played a poor series against the Kiwis and thus far against Australia, but I'm giving him one more chance.
Well, keep talking.
I think that's why.
Him, because I'll give you his averages against Australia and New Zealand, and then you'll see against the West Indies and the Indians last year in England. Well, gee, they tried hard. I'll give you two sets of averages in a moment. Carry on. David Hussey and Rob Quine.
For mine, Ian Bell's going out, and Joe Root goes up to the pivotal position at number four, and Johnny Bairstow's coming in at number five. He's in career best form and making runs for fun at Yorkshire.
Is he batting at four or five at Yorkshire?
He's batting five at Yorkshire.
You wouldn't put Bairstow at four. Why, Lee? Root's going beautifully, isn't he?
Yep, he's going to number four, the pivotal number four. At the moment, they've only got three players, which is Alistair Cook, Joe Root, Ben Stokes. And I'll reserve a pat on the back for Joss Butler for actually walking off when he was going to be given not out by...
Jeez, wasn't there a little bit of talk about that when, you know, obviously last Ashes series over there, when Broadnick won to fifth slip and didn't walk. But then this bloke's obviously known, well, there's no point sticking around because they're going to review it. I nicked it, but poor old Nevy was worried about the stumping more than anything and then went up with the rest of the crowd as they appealed. But
full credit to Joss Butler, champion. Well done for walking off.
So he's not on his last legs either?
No, he's going well. He's keeping quite well, and he's a match winner. So give him a bit of belief and continue playing your shots, and I think he can be a match winner for the English.
I'll get you, Butler. This is what Bob Willis had to say today about live and... balance, I need to read as follows. To my eye, there's no way that Live and Balance are going to get runs against Australia this summer. The Australians know how to get Adam Live out and have done it four times in the series. The New Zealanders did it as well. He's got the problem Alistair Cook had outside off stump when he was a young player. Australia find a batsman's weakness and go for the kill every time. Gary Balance has also endured a disappointing match. I don't think you can play Test cricket batting within the popping crease all the time. And if he's not getting bowled out, he's wanting to feel bad on ball.
In saying that, and he goes a little bit deeper than Bucky, if that's possible, but in the crease, Bucky doesn't come that far outside his crease either. I think the difference is that, I mean, Bucky looks to score. They both try and play late, but Bucky just gets in a better
position. But he's feeling for the ball balance. He's back there.
Yeah, and against New Zealand, and you know, you... might either disagree or agree with me, Huss, is that the wickets were a lot spicier, and it actually worked New Zealand's favour a little bit, I reckon, you know, with Southey and Bolt, but that's why the bit spicy swung around and he, but again, it looked bad.
It looked really bad. This is not to be confused in any way for courage, because I'm not saying he's not trying to get behind the ball for self-preservation, but he's really feeling outside of stump. He did against New Zealand. He's pushing at the ball, and the bat's a fair way away from the body. Well, as Bob Willis pointed out, an Australian attack will always have bowlers that can exploit people that are feeling for the ball. And he's done it now in four consecutive tests. They can't play him, honestly. He has a real feel about a tail-ender coming in.
Fawny, would you leave Lythe and Balance out then? Both of them?
I'd play Lythe.
You'd play Lythe, give him another go.
I don't think... Who else have they got?
Stoneman from
Durham.
How
about Carberry?
Carberry, that, as we touched on, was it with Gucci or yep, Mike Gatting? Gucci sort of was a bit stiff initially, but then hasn't really set the world on fire since.
Sometimes you've got to pull a player like that from... Do you think that works, taking a player that might not be worth playing, say, at Shield level at full rat's power, but has got a good record against a test opponent, giving him that opportunity?
Well, sometimes you get a feeling about a player and sometimes you play at the better competition, they actually score runs and they lift their game to a certain intensity. But
Because you test cricket, because they did everything they possibly could to keep you out of the test team, including players that were in form, weren't in form, promised they would be in form 3 weeks from now.
It's just Bastards. One of those things. No, that's fine.
It's not fine.
I'm on Finey's wagon there.
I think now there is I think now with selection, there is... The cricket public understands what the selection criteria is. Basically, if you're in very good form, you'll get picked for Australia, regardless of your age or your even previous history, but...
Which is excellent. Adam Voges' selection is a top selection, making 100 on debut for the West Indies. Brilliant. Chris Rogers, he got selected because he's had experience in England and has done particularly well in England before. And he's been probably the rock the Australians haven't had since Justin Langer or Matthew Hayden.
Hustler, how many runs did Voges get this test?
No, not many. Probably
so that
more
that,
than the previous test.
25.
Yeah, but that's a difference a win makes. No one's questioning there. Like, I think the only questions are there whether Bucky's going to come full fitness, which fingers crossed and toes crossed he does. And the debate, I guess now, because Nevy started so well, is Neville versus Haddon.
And no one's also questioning Mitchell Maas, who made 12 and hit a couple of sixes in the back end of the innings. Is that good enough to warrant a batting position in the test team? I would say not, but they're going to go with Mitchell Marsh for quite some time.
Boys, there's a question here on the text that, and it's from an amateur, so it's definitely not you, Huss. Can a pitch change so dramatically from day one to, let's say, day two or three, or is it purely good batting and or bad bowling?
A bit of both. I thought day one, the test match, just watching it, it was a little bit soft, a little bit damp, swung around a bit, good overhead conditions. But I thought day two and day three were the two best days of batting. And the English, well, Alistair Cook, I thought, and Ben Stokes actually batted quite well and actually almost put the English into a sort of sneaky chance of winning the test at the back end of day five with maybe a 320 run chase on day five. But geez, they were
off.
Poor. They were absolutely poor.
How about their spinner? Now, they worked a couple of good plans with him in the first test, and when he got Warner out, it looked like he's the sort of guy who's resilient. He certainly won't be put off his bowling, but to quote the great Viv Richards when asked about Richard Illingworth, who he batted against prior to Illingworth's test debut, Viv Richards said, "Only time he turn is at the top of his mind."
Whatever Viv says, pretty cool, isn't it?
Well, when does Moeen Ali turn the ball? When the pitch is turning, he does the natural spin, but in the first couple of days, not a lot of deviation off the wicket, I would have thought.
I also think the way they approached him, and Steve Smith's such a fantastic player of spin, but they just milked him as opposed to, you know, be way too aggressive.
Their tactics were superb, weren't they? They kept him on throughout the game.
And as soon as they gave the batters in-out fields, which is, you know, a couple of catches and a couple of men in the deep, they just milked him. And it was purely Ali was ending up bowling to look after their quicks. So, and that's what Australia need them to do. So they've done it now, and there's a small chance that Rashid could play in the play two spinners if they're going to produce these wickets.
You know that the batsman is in complete control, but it must be so demoralising for a bowler, because over that long period that he was bowling to Steve Smith, there were times where he brought the mid off up or he brought the mid on up just to try and do something different.
Great,
well, it
yeah.
was different, because the minute he did it, the ball went over that fieldsman's head.
Yeah, but
every time.
Yeah, but that's what you wanted. But and ultimately, Steve Smith was in control the whole time. And I think that's
control.
Great. You bring him up, have a go, because you know, you never know. But I guess the quality of the spinner of Ali is compared to a full-time spinner, that might be showing there. But in saying that, he had such a good first test. So, you know, there's such, you know, chalk and cheese in both tests that, you know, this is such an important test, this one coming up at Edgbaston.
I mean, he got hit there so often, there was a guy sitting, his seat was just on the mid-on boundary, and he asked the MCC whether he could change his
seat. People with seats and falling down their seats, did you see that?
Well, they got
that was amazing, that bird who fell off.
She's good looking.
She was very attractive. Not as attractive as our wives, though.
We're lucky people.
Very lucky.
I think she's a bit prettier than my wife, but anyhow. But nowhere near as nice a person. A break.
Tick. Good save.
A break, and it's what's inside that counts. Have I got out of it? I don't think so. When we come back, the happily married brother of David Hussey, Mr. Michael Hussey.
Hang on. There's still a bit of me inside. Get out.
Oh, bumble. I was circumcised at 8 days of age, but obviously it came a little bit later for the great David Lloyd, whose commentary has become a feature of not only Ashes cricket, but a lot of cricket that we enjoy here on our screens, because we get the international product, and he joins us on Bring Back the Ashes. Good evening, Melbourne time, David.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. It's cloudy over here. I've got a dog in the car, so what could go possibly wrong?
Nothing. I thought you were going to say you've got a dog in the third, and I was going to activate my betting account. I've got Robert Quiney here, of course, Australian cricketer, David Hussey, and I sit back and hand over to the pros.
Bumble, how you doing? It's Bobby Quiney.
Yeah, Rob, good to speak to all of you, yeah.
You also, mate. You're easily my favourite commentator, so this is a very exciting moment for me, but listen, I was listening to your dulcet tones, beautiful dulcet tones, on day two, and you suggested that no one in the England cricket camp wanted this wicket. My question is to you, seeing you've got all the inside info, is who did want this wicket then?
The chief executive picked. It's another of those. We get them in England. And I know that David will understand this, that you get corporate pitches. And going back to Cardiff, you know, that was a pitch that nobody wanted. Cardiff or Glamorgan Cricket Club need the money. And so they make it as flatter, as placid as possible. And the same at Lords. But they've been four-day pitches. I think win the toss, win the game.
Things going to change come Edgbaston?
I wouldn't have thought so. I spoke to Trevor Bayliss, and you know Trevor really well. And it was just a yarn over a cup of coffee, and he said, we don't want these pitches.
Yep.
And of course, the bowlers there spitting feathers that they definitely don't want them. And Cook, in interview after the second game, after the Lords game, Cook in interview was said, what sort of pitch do you want? He said, an English one.
Makes sense.
David, it's Dave Hussey here, mate. Hope you're well. The English media are hammering the English cricket team at the moment. What impact does this have on the team selection going into Edgbaston?
Well, the latest thing is that Trevor Bayliss says that they're having a meeting on Tuesday. That's today. So Tuesday, it'll be a long meeting. But I would expect one change. You know, you win one game so well, a beautiful match for England at Cardiff, and then you get absolutely steamrolled at Lords. You know what it's like? Test cricket for me hasn't changed. If you play test match cricket, you've got the skill. That's why you're selected. And then it becomes a test of resolve, a test of character, a test of bravery, a test of responsibility. And I think that both teams, the losing teams, didn't have any of that. So they've got to get their act together for this next game. England, I think, will make one change depending on the pitch.
And that change being?
Depending on the pitch, and I'll tell you something else about that pitch in a second. It would be balance to miss out, number three, for Root to go number three, and to play maybe either or Rashid or Bairstow, depending on the pitch.
And that would leave England's middle order exposed. Look, the deck chairs shuffle, but surely Bairstow needs to come in to add some backbone, as we know him as a player that has a bit of fight about him, because it appears now, and tell us whether I'm wrong, that Bell needs some protecting. It's a player that had so dominated Australia is now a player that Australia will be targeting.
Well, Ian Bell has got quality written over him, but he's been dormant. He's been anonymous in the last few test matches. So what's happening to him, he's having a chronic loss of form. Now, I don't drop them players. I want him into the team because I'm going to back him to come back into form. He had a little glimpse at Cardiff when he got a 50. Anonymous at Lords, so they need him to be a big scorer. He's an established player. But if Bairstow plays, last time he played in Australia, he got totally shafted by the England selectors. So, you know, they got spanned 5-0, and eventually they played Johnny Bairstow, who hadn't been playing any cricket anywhere, to turn up against Australia and say, well, you know, you go and perform. He's pie in the sky. That's not going to happen. What I remember about Johnny Bairstow is that he played against South Africa at Lords, and he got 96 and 58, and he took them on. He played beautifully. Now, he's in great form, and so there's no reason why you don't put him into the team. And that would mean that Bairstow would be, what, round about number 5, Stokes 6, Butler 7, Rashid 8, Ali 6, Stokes 5, unless you're playing Bairstow, of course, yeah. I'm talking about playing Rashid, so that's the other alternative. If not, it's a straight swap for balance, although Root to bat at 3 and Bairstow come in at 5.
And Bummel, you're a former coach of the English cricket team. How would you motivate the team in preparation for Edgbaston?
Well, I wouldn't have said too much at that particular time. And, you know, you'd say, as the captain said in interview, that was not acceptable. I think there's a time to say that and to shake it up a bit and to have the hard word, to look in the mirror, did you give your best performance? did you leave anything out there? There would be, the team themselves would be hurting in that second test match, just as Australia were in the first test match. And Michael Clarke came out in interview. He said, that's a massive wake-up call. We needed that. We were poor. So once you identify and acknowledge that that's a poor performance, and again, you're coming back to the coaches, whether it be Lehman or Bayliss, you can get beat, fine, and you can hold your hand up. They've been better than us. They've had some quality performances. But if your performance is not up to scratch, you're going to have a word with the players. That performance is not acceptable. I can get beat, no problem in getting beaten by a team that's better on the day, but that performance was unacceptable.
A performance that's never unacceptable is your own, Bumble. I just wonder, on the lighter side of things, do all the commentators get on, firstly? And secondly, do you hang out outside of the day's play as well and catch up over a couple of drinks, or are you sick of each other? And also just wondering, are you getting double pay at the moment, being on Sky and Channel 9?
Yeah, well, let's go to the last bit first, yes?
Perfectly.
There is a modest consideration for working for Channel 9.
Okay.
So there's a modest consideration, although I will be doing it for the game itself.
Okay.
I do get paid, obviously, from Sky. It's a great question. Do we all get on? I think it's a load of nonsense when they say that a team of 11, 12, 13, and we finish play at 7 o'clock and then we all go out and have dinner. Absolute nonsense. And it's the same in a country team. The one thing that you do is respect each other. When it comes to work, you work with each other and you respect. And I'm not going to tell you, I wouldn't give a couple of hours house room, but I do spend time with some of them. And I also spend time with our producer and director. Now, I think that's a smart move, to be with the bosses.
Very smart, Bumble.
I know that probably because of similarity in sound to the listener and to the viewer, it might not have happened very often, but how often have you shared the commentary box with Geoffrey Boycott?
Very rarely. When Sky started in 1991, we worked together, and from time to time I would drive him round. I would be his chauffeur. And you could tell, I mean, you know Geoffrey, he'd be very appreciative of that lift. In fact, he used to put his feet up on the dashboard, put his hat over his eyes and say, wake me up when we get there.
And chip in for the petrol, he would have, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a Yorkshireman, he'd go halves. are you guys dreaming over there or what?
I reckon we might be dreaming, because on our TV screens, currently as we speak, Bumble, at the MCG, the home of cricket, AS Roma are being beaten by Manchester City 2-1.
That'd be Bumble's team, I reckon, Man City.
Oh, he's a Yorkshireman, not a Lancashireman.
He's a Lanksman. Lancashireman.
Accrington Stanley.
Yeah, you got it. I'm a board member. I'm on the board at Accrington Stanley. And if any of you guys want to buy us, you can have us.
Huss mine, he's got plenty of cash.
I'm looking for a rich Australian to come and buy Accrington Stanley.
Accrington, no.
An absolute ball. We're in League Two. There's Manchester United and Manchester City. I'll very briefly tell you about Man United and Manchester City. If you live in Manchester, you support Manchester City. If you're a bit of a fancy Dan and you live in Mumbai, or you live in Monaco, or you live in Hyderabad, or you live in Los Angeles, you support Manchester United.
Well, then what am I, David, because I'm a member of Rochdale.
You're an idiot.
Oh, fantastic. I love it. That's brilliant.
I am. I pay 20 quid a week, a year a week, 20 quid a year to be a Spotland supporter overseas.
Well, that's absolutely fabulous. Well, I'm on the board at Accrington Stanley, and we're going places this year. We've got seven new players, and I can see us finishing midway into the division.
Onwards and upwards.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Mr. Lloyd. England won, Australia won. No need for rash changes or crazy notions of axings, and that common sense approach was borne out by David Lloyd in that chat. Thanks again.
Cheers, Bumble.
Thank you.
Take care, mate.
I've got it 2-2. 2-2 for me.
and crack the window. You've got the dog in the car. Invariably, the one thing a dog does when it is a passenger in a car, it'll give you a silent but deadly reminder that it's there.
And here's someone else. It's not my dog.
Oh, well then he won't fart. If it's not yours, if he doesn't know you, if he's not familiar, I'm sure he'll hold it in. All the best, David.
All right, see you soon, lads.
Good on you, Bumble. It's 2-2 at the football because AS Roma with a free kick right on the edge of the penalty area.
Well, those, centre forward.
Those boys have got class. Look at the joy on the bench for AS Roma. Where will they go after the game? Not much in Melbourne on a Tuesday night, boys. It's probably off to the casino.
Every innings we've been 4-30. Or 4-40. And in the first innings, I thought, to get to 300 from where we were, they showed some good character. So they've certainly got it in them.
That's a huge tail end. And I'm not talking about the English batting lineup. Embarrassing bodies has flicked onto the screen once again. In the soccer, 91 minutes gone. I think it's going to be a draw between AS Roma and Man City. Well, David Hussey, of course, and Rob Quine are here thanks to Squires Loft. They're in Essendon and Albert Park, where both of the venues churn out the beautiful steak, the great ambience of a true steakhouse. And what goes better with steak than beer? I say nothing. And we have got the Cricketer's Arm Brewery. They've got two products, Bobby. They've got the Pale Ale.
Pale Ale and the Keeper's Lager as well, which is my preferred drop.
Mine too. Delicious. Refreshing.
And Asahi backed. Now, I love Asahi as a beer. So they've got the support. Is that Kirin Brewery? Or Asahi Brewery? Anyhow, the Japanese know how to make a beer.
They do. They know how to make a lot of things. But the Cricketer's Arms does a job for sure.
The only thing they couldn't do was safely land on the deck of another airplane carrier. That they never mastered. Talking about mastering, we have Mr. Cricket joining us, of course, back. I think he's back as an Australian supporter, is he, after the World Cup, David?
I don't know. Better ask him. Evening, Michael.
How's it, Mike?
G'day, gentlemen. How's it going? Definitely an Australian fan. Very happy with the last Test match, that's for sure.
The boys will jump in shortly, Bobby and your brother, but from the batting perspective of the English team, we've spoken about their failures. The one thing that the Australians managed to do was obviously get off to a huge start. There is still, though, the captain to get right, and statistics tell us that he is a vastly better batsman, better scorer at number 5 than at number 4. Should he, the team, accommodate a move back to number 5?
Well, it's a good question, but I personally don't think so, no. I think he's, along with Steve Smith, the most decorated batsman in the team, and they need to be in the key positions, number 3 and number 4. They're the most important places in the team. He has scored runs at number 4 before. He's average, and that looks better at number 5, but you've also got to think about he's one person in the team, and you've got to have the right guys in the right places. There is an argument for it, no question, but there's no point in pushing Adam Voges up higher or other players going, Mitch Marsh going up higher. I just think he's better off just staying where he is and just getting out there and scoring runs. Unfortunately, it happens to every batsman. You have a little patch where you don't quite get as many runs as you'd like, but I'd certainly be backing him for the last few Test matches to get some big scores.
And surely 2 for 362 is the equivalent of batting at 5 sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. I think, he would have been more than happy to come in at that stage of the game and... Yeah, it's just the way it goes. It just takes one ball and you're out. It's such a mental game, as Dave and Bobby would certainly know. And that's why I was so impressed with how the Australians turned it around so quickly. I'm sure a lot of the batsmen in particular would have been a little bit low on confidence after the Cardiff Test. But to be able to turn around and play so positively as a team and change the momentum of the whole series so quickly has just been phenomenal. And they've obviously got a lot of mental toughness in that team.
Evening, Michael. It's your brother here. Hope you're well.
Good to hear you from you, Dave. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long while, yeah. Hope caravanning up the north WA has treated you well. But I'm also in agreement, so I think Michael Clark's going to set the world alight, especially in Birmingham. What can we expect from both teams coming up?
Yeah, well, it's going to be really interesting to see. I thought the Aussies were perhaps a little bit tentative in the first test, and I'm sure with Michael and Darren Lehman that they really, I think they would have said to the team, right, let's just go out there and be positive, be confident, And it showed. Chris Rogers in the very first over, taking on the English and really set the tone and set, you know, send a really good message, I think, to the English that they weren't going to back down and be defensive in this. In a way, the English have probably been a little bit defensive by sort of, making pretty slow, flat tracks, you know, trying to negate our quicks and just trying to sort of hang in there in the test match and hope that we sort of make mistakes. So I think they've got to try and now turn it around and try and come out with a more positive attitude and try and take the game on a little bit and see how the Aussies react to that. But it's going to be a fascinating third test. It is, at the end of the day, it's only one all. I think Australia will take a lot of confidence out of Lords, but both teams start none for none when they get to Birmingham.
Mike, Bobby Quarney here. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Bobby. How are you?
All the better for speaking for you, mate. Listen, just you've been retired for a couple of years now, but you were quite close with a few of the boys there. I'm just wondering whether any of the boys in that camp sort of stay in touch with you, whether it's just as a mate or whether some of the batters probably seek you out for some guidance.
Not so much the guidance side of things. So I think the guys know their games pretty well throughout that top order. Definitely stay in touch with quite a few of the guys. And yes, certainly wish them well before every test and make sure they celebrate appropriately when they win a test match, particularly at Lords as well. So
with the cricketer's arms?
I don't know what they have, but you know what it's like. It's very hard to win a test match and you've got to enjoy the good days because, as you guys know, there's too many bad days. So, yeah, they've got to enjoy the good ones.
And how's it feeling being a spectator rather than a player, Michael?
I don't miss it whatsoever, actually. I don't miss the stress and the pressure and the expectation that I know these guys will be feeling, particularly after that first test in Cardiff. You know, that would have been pretty low and all the media speculation and it would have been a horrible place to be. But then certainly it would have been fantastic to be in the rooms at Lords after that fantastic team performance. So
because of the beers?
definitely miss those little things. But no, not the stress and the pressure, that's for sure.
And Mike, one question away from Mike Hussey, our special guest, one question away from the Ashes. From memory, did you play for the Chennai Super Kings?
Yes, I did play for the Chennai Super Kings.
Or the club formerly known as the Chennai Super. I mean, what does that mean? We just read in the paper that they and the Rajasthan Royals are in big, big trouble. But it's a huge story over there. It's sort of been like kicking Carlton or Collingwood out of the AFL.
Yeah, exactly. It's
a good idea.
Some would argue, for sure. It is huge over there because Chennai, in particular, have been one of the, you know, if not the most successful team in the competition. Okay, it's only been going for about, I think, eight or nine years, I can't remember. But so the history is short, but I think it sends a really strong message to everyone in the competition, the administrators, the owners, the players, that you know, obviously betting in games of cricket is not going to be tolerated and you're going to be kicked out of the game. And so from that point of view, it's good. It's a good, strong message. But obviously from our point of view, it's really disappointing because I know personally there's a lot of very good people at that club that are very passionate about the team and they work extremely hard and are really good people. And unfortunately, they've been penalised for it as well.
And just quickly, the people of Chennai, it's become a big part of their lives, hasn't it?
Oh, without doubt. You know, the crowds there, Dave will be able to attest. He played there as well. The crowds there are phenomenal and the support for the Chennai Super Kings, not just even in Chennai, but we would be playing some away games and have more support than some of the home teams at away games. So, you know, guys like MS Dhoni is just an icon over there and we've got a number of other Indian players that are just much loved. So it is a shame, but as I said, it sends a pretty strong message.
Huss, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
No worries at all.
We love your input, and we are very disappointed that Dave hasn't made more of an effort to speak to you off air.
Up to Amy and the kids, Michael. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, and to your family too, Dave. Well, hopefully, just the odd text every now and then would be nice, you know, just to say good day.
You don't even text, but you don't have my number saved in your phone.
Under others. Thanks a lot, Mike.
See you, Mike.
Okay, no worries, guys. Cheers. See you, Bobby.
See you, mate.
Mike Hussey, we're going to take a quick break. They're now sorting this game out with penalties at the MCG, which seems a good old-fashioned waste of time. But we are not wasting time. When we come back, we wrap it up on Bring Back the Ashes, thanks to Squire's Loft and Cricketer's Arms Brewery.